The big news this week, Martin, other than the Iranian Revolutionary Guard being supposedly a terrorist organisation, according to Pompeo, is yesterday's rather sad arrest of Julian Assange, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Assange is important because it's basically an attempt to shut him up and to shut other people up, who, like us, for example, who tell truth to power.
But Assange has done, I think, probably more than we have to get some of this information out to the public, including all sorts of manuals to spyware, for example, so that those who computer geeks, etc., can see what might be lurking on computers. A lot of this spyware, of course, has been developed by our own government, sometimes by the private security industry, contracted to our government or the National Security Agency in the US.
Well, yes, and you saw the book that Assange was holding when he was dragged out of the embassy. It was Gore Vidal's book about the deep state in the US. I don't think it's called deep state, but that's what's been going on for years. We haven't really got a democracy. We've got an oligarchy which suppresses inconvenient information.
And I was surprised, though.
Assange is in the crosshairs.
I was surprised, though, that the commentary really didn't talk much about what he was saying as he came out of the embassy.
Saying the UK must resist, the UK must resist, and then something about the Trump administration, pretty obviously saying he doesn't want to be extradited and the UK must stand up for him, which maybe we will.
And so let's have a listen to him now. I mean, they didn't really do this on any of the mainstream broadcasts I saw in the UK. So, ultimately, he's been through an enormous number of revelations over the years, Martin, hasn't he? Really starting, I suppose, most spectacularly with the release of the footage of US airmen actually murdering a whole load of Reuters cameramen in Iraq.
Yes, and that is, I understand that the extradition proceedings, which for many years they were told there were no extradition proceedings, and it was all just paranoia by Assange, and it turns out, of course, that there were extradition proceedings, and now we know, and it's out in the open. What he's been saying for years is true. Yes, they do want to extradite me.
Iraq and Afghan war logs, extremely important. I think what I'll do is I'll put a graphic up on our show page at thisweek.org.uk about this. But, I mean, this is a whole load of military war logs from the Pentagon and backwards and forwards to commanders and politicians about the Afghan war and the Iraq war.
Yes, and
this is unprecedented. In fact, I think it's unprecedented in history that so much has been released in this way.
Indeed, and of course a lot of it was picked up by the mainstream media, the New York Times, etc., the Guardian, the BBC. So why aren't all these people being arrested and taken, dragged off to court? And that's because they're
what they're trying to accuse Assange of is being a hacker, but actually he was receiving leaked information.
Right. That's right, he's not a hacker. And of course, one of the fundamental things which is interesting, which you know, an arrest like this gives us a chance to say, well, what is it that he's actually said? Because I think that's the most important thing. When freedom of speech is under attack, you should immediately say, well, what are they saying that they don't want us to hear?
Okay, so we mentioned the collateral murder video, which captured US indiscriminate slaying of civilians. That was back in 2010.
Which was Chelsea Manning's leak, wasn't it?
Yes, and they're saying that both he and Chelsea Manning, this is what they're trying to say anyway, conspired to hack a computer. Well, I mean, that's really just simply not true.
No, it's not. I mean, Chelsea Manning was the leaker, and in a sense, the government's got a leak. You know, they have official secrets acts and so on to protect. Insiders aren't supposed to leak if they've signed secrecy acts and so on.
Then we had 2010, 2011. We had over that winter something called Cablegate, which is US diplomatic cables revealing corruption worldwide. Things like kicking off the Tunisian Revolution. I mean, these are really important geopolitical matters.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, yes, and of course, probably more essential in geopolitical terms is the emails from the Democratic National Committee.
No, we'll get in there in a minute, yeah? So let's just take it. We're doing a timeline here, right? In 2011, we had something called the Gitmo Files, which is a revealing of torture of prisoners and deaths due to mistreatment and the torture files. They call it the Gitmo Files. That was in 2011.
Yeah. And, of course, the point, as you made it earlier, this is not hacked information. This is leaked information. So insiders pass the information to WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks check it, check whether it's real, and then redacted let it out so that people can see what's going on behind the scenes. And of course, it paints a very different picture from the official stories. There is torture going on. The people at the top knew torture was going on. They approved of torture. They tortured people. They are torturers.
What's wrong with that? Surely that's just the way away in the modern
it's
world.
It's illegal. And everybody involved in it could be prosecuted and sent to prison.
Okay, in 2016, Operation Sophia was one of the WikiLeaks. You know, it's amazing. I was just looking through the list, and what we forget is incredible. Mm. This was the NSA spying on world leaders and citizens. A whole load of evidence that this is going on. I mean, we're talking about all around the world. If I remember rightly, part of this was looking at the way that the Germans spy on the British and the British spy on the Germans, even though we're supposed to be in some sort of an alliance. But to actually be able to read some of the intel reports is fascinating.
Yes, and then, of course, they don't like their modus operandi being exposed in this way, and it makes it difficult for them to carry on
but
doing
it's not
what
just
they're doing.
World
but, of course, a lot of what they're doing, and I come back to this, a lot of what they're doing has no legal basis, and things which have no legal basis are illegal, just like Gladio, which we're going to come to later in the show.
That makes them criminals, doesn't it?
That makes them all criminals, which means that they're all open to prosecution.
But also...
And that's what could happen.
A
new generation is coming into political consciousness now. A lot of these people from the previous generation could end up in prison.
Spying on civil society leaders, that sort of thing, and ordinary citizens who are part of these groups. So if you simply literally go down the road and you're trying to do, you know, you have a meeting in a pub, you're thinking about doing some campaign to stop some motorway or whatever it is you happen to be doing, the NSA are there, apparently.
Yes, and of course, what's pretty obvious is that before the advent of modern computers, collecting all of this information was rather pointless because you just have great big piles of stuff that you couldn't possibly analyse. Whereas what they've got now with computers is that the mass surveillance of the population becomes absolutely feasible, and they're engaged in it. And they're engaged in it because they want to manipulate the population to make war and to steal other people's resources.
This is, in a way, isn't it, what was being prosecuted at Watergate? The idea that the Secret Services would then start interfering in civil society and people's ability to actually campaign on political issues, to spy on them in order to stop campaigns before they've even got started, for example.
Well, indeed, and of course, you'd be pretty naive not to know that that's been going on for a very long time. And of course, the idea that we used to live in a democracy and that it was taken away from
us is rather
pointless.
What WikiLeaks has
never lived in one.
Is it's provided the hard evidence for what for years were conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Then we get to your bit, which is 2016, the DNC emails. Really important, this. A pro-Clinton media bias exposed. So discussions between the Clinton campaign and heads of the US media, making sure that they present Hillary Clinton in a good light in order to win her the presidential election.
The Democratic primary.
The revelation of the scheme to push Bernie Sanders out of the presidential race.
Yes, in other words, and this is very significant because nobody disputes what's in these emails. Not the FBI, not the CIA, not anybody. They all say that these emails show that the Democratic primaries were rigged to prevent Bernie Sanders from being the candidate. And of course, if you've got an official two-party system in the US, rigging one of the party's internal primaries is basically rigging the whole system. Now, everybody admits that this is very damaging to the vision of America as a democratic society, and that what the FBI and CIA have been saying is that is so damaging that it must be Russian intelligence that did this. Now, it isn't Russian intelligence that rigged the primary. It was the DNC National Committee working with the oligarchy and the CIA.
Okay, so what was Julian Assange's role then?
Well, Julian Assange was passed the information about all of this, the emails, and of course it was actually picked up by Craig Murray, who flew to the US to pick up the information.
But I think they denied him entry when he first arrived,
yes,
and he had to get
right.
a second flight.
That's right. And they've said all along that we didn't get this stuff from the Russians. And it's not a hack anyway, it's a leak. It was given to us on an MP3 stick, not something that we had to hack into a computer to get.
Okay, so...
And, of course, what it shows is that US politics is rigged, not by the Russian intelligence services, but by the US intelligence services. And if Bernie Sanders had been the candidate against Donald Trump in the election, he might well have won. In that case, there could have been a lot of people who've been sent to prison.
Okay, in 2017, WikiLeaks did what I thought was one of their most mind-blowing leaks, which was called Vault 7. Documents specify CIA spy toolkits, surveillance and cyber warfare. Now, this includes things like the ability to hack into vehicles, including cars, actually implanting spyware into your car's computer using an innocent-looking compact disc. Say, for example, you put it into your CD player, and as soon as it goes in there, what happens is it links up parts of the car's computer, which are not supposed to be linked, so that then the car can be just literally taken over remotely and steered, if necessary, into a brick wall at full speed.
Like Michael Hastings, the journalist who was investigating David Petraeus and the CIA.
Now, also,
then just crashed into a wall at 90 miles an hour.
I mean, it's not just cars, it's other forms of transport that can be hacked, including things like trains and aircraft.
And also electricity substation systems, like in Venezuela the other week, which pretty much clearly was carried out by these kind of forces who wrecked the electricity generation system in Venezuela.
I mean, there's so much in the Vault 7, it's well worth. And actually, what I will do is I'll put a link up on our show page again to the whole Vault 7 link, because as I remember it, I think it's the Sydney Morning Herald did a fantastic graphic on all the things that were revealed in that one data dump by WikiLeaks. And that is the use of televisions to spy on people. So in hotels, in your home, when you switch the TV off or on standby, actually it's still live, and the microphone is transmitting information about anything that anyone in the room is saying. So this wasn't known about. This sort of stuff was suspected, but this gives hard evidence that this is going on all over the world now.
Yes, and of course the powers that be that are doing all these nefarious things don't want people to know about it, which is why they're throwing the book at Assange, to intimidate others, basically. I mean, you know, a lot of Assange's material has ended up, as I say, in mainstream publications, BBC, Guardian, New York Times, but none of those people are being prosecuted. And that's because there's a lot of manipulation going on. And of course, sometimes the leaks are manipulated as well. You know, we can't just presume that because something has been leaked, it's been leaked for a decent purpose. There may be other ulterior motives involved.
Okay, well, anyway, the Home Secretary, Sahid Javid, did have something to say about this yesterday in the House of Commons.
This morning, after nearly 7 years inside the Ecuadorian embassy, Mr. Assange was arrested for failing to surrender in relation to his extradition proceedings. He was later also served with a warrant for provisional arrest, pending receipt of a request for extradition to stand trial in the United States on charges relating to computer offences. The Metropolitan Police entered the embassy for the purpose of arresting and removing him. All of the police's activities were carried out pursuant to a formal written invitation signed by the Ecuadorian ambassador and in accordance with the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations. The decision as to whether any statutory bars to extradition apply would be for the UK courts to determine. I will go no further in discussing the details of the accusations against Mr. Assange, either in the UK's criminal justice system or in the US. Mr. Assange will now have the opportunity to contest the charge against him in open court and to have any extradition request considered by the judiciary.
Well, I personally, as a British taxpayer, I resent spending millions of pounds to keep Assange in the Ecuadorian embassy. All he has to do was be allowed to go to Ecuador when Correa was the president, and of course Moreno has basically betrayed his mandate, and Correa has basically been very...
Because Assange's detractors have said, well, he could have walked out any time, but of course he couldn't.
No, he couldn't. And what he said is they gave him citizenship, and they said, well, can't we just take him to Ecuador? And they said, no, he's got to stay here. So in other words, the British courts and the British police have spent millions, literally millions, 7 years they've been staking that embassy out with all police on overtime pay, no doubt. Meanwhile, we've got an austerity programme, which means that kids come to school without enough to eat. But we've got money to spend on this to keep the Americans happy and their Israeli overlords, because that's what we're really talking about here.
Okay, so Diane Abbott, the Shadow Home Secretary, had this to say.
The reason we are debating Julian Assange this afternoon, even though the only charge he may face in this country is in relation to his bail hearings, the reason we are debating this afternoon is entirely to do with the whistleblowing activities of Julian Assange on WikiLeaks. It is this whistleblowing activity into illegal wars, mass murder, murder of civilians and corruption on a grand scale that has put Julian Assange in the crosshairs of the US administration. Julian Assange is not being pursued to protect US national security. He is being pursued because he has exposed wrongdoing by US administrations and their military forces. And we only have to look at the treatment of Chelsea Manning to see what awaits him if he's extradited to the US.
Well, I'm glad to hear that Diane Abbott's saying those things. And clearly the Tory government is going to try and press the case that Assange is a wicked man and we've done the right thing here. In actual fact, he's going to get some pretty top lawyers, I can imagine. And it's quite clear that he shouldn't be extradited to the US at all, because what he's done is not a crime. And he's not even a US citizen, he's an Australian citizen. And he didn't carry out any of these crimes in the US. So in actual fact, they haven't got a leg to stand on. He should basically just be allowed to go home to Australia. That's what should happen here.
Well, it's nice to see, actually, that the National Union of Journalists also says today, following UK police forcibly removing WikiLeaks founder Assange from the Ecuadorian embassy in London, Seamus Dooley said the NUJ is shocked and concerned by the actions of the authorities today in relation to Julian Assange. He's the Assistant General Secretary. His lawyer has confirmed he's been arrested not just for breach of bail conditions, but also in relation to US extradition requests. He always feared this, didn't he?
Yes, and of course, for years and years, the bien pensant media said, he's just a narcissist, you know, there's no extradition request, it's all to do with the rape allegations, blah, blah, blah. But of course it wasn't. It was all to do with they wanted to get him. And using, you know, parliamentary privilege in the US, people have actually called for him to be assassinated. Can you do that? Can you call for people to be assassinated? Suppose you can. They've got away with it. Is it legal?
I don't know. I don't know if that would breach the Ofcom guidelines, would it?
Well, I don't know. I'm just telling you that US politicians have openly called for him to be assassinated and for WikiLeaks to be treated as a foreign terrorist organisation similar
anyway,
to the
Martin,
Iranian Republican Guard.
One of the most fascinating things about this is that just 3 weeks ago, the International Monetary Fund approved a $4.2 billion loan to Ecuador. International Monetary Fund, it's part of a broader aid package to help support the government economic reform program. Washington-based lender agreed to the terms of the financing late last month. The final approval of the IMF board on Monday releases the first installment of $652 million. Actually, it seems that the IMF does this, doesn't it? And those countries' leaders who behave themselves get the loans. And in South Africa at the moment, they're having a few problems with actually getting the IMF. They must be doing something the IMF don't like.
Well, I mean, also, of course, the IMF loan is actually to carry out IMF policy. And, of course, the Correa regime, and he won two terms. And, of course, the Ecuadorian constitution doesn't allow him to stand again. So Lenin Moreno... Lenin is his name, because he was named after it by his dad, after Lenin, was part of Correa's party. But what he's done as he's come to power is switched sides, and he's basically moving into the privatisation, deregulation. The Ecuadorian government has not been very supportive of the Venezuelan government, unlike, for example, the Bolivian government, which is still solidly behind Maduro. And Correa, who's actually left Ecuador, he's actually in exile. Moreno is actually being exposed for corruption. He was exposed for corruption by the New York Times. And, of course, he's blamed that on Assange, but Assange had nothing to do with that. WikiLeaks has never leaked anything about what goes on in Ecuador. So that's just a red herring. And basically, Moreno has betrayed his political base. He's betrayed his former comrade, Correa. And Correa, based outside Ecuador now, said that Moreno is a disgusting traitor to Latin America and to Ecuador. And that's the reality. And, of course, he is.
In the meantime as well, we hear this week something called the Online Harms. It's more legislation in order to regulate what can and cannot be said online. So I would imagine that this is also an attempt, in fact, looking at some implication here, some of the rights groups have called this out, that the government's Online Harms white paper may start to do is to stop people sharing anything which is a national security story which has been leaked. So it seems almost that Assange is being taken out of the way, and also his whole methodology of getting stuff out to the public, which the mainstream press won't print, is also being removed by this Online Harms policy.
Well, we shall see whether they can actually enforce that when it comes down to it. We all know that, you know, intelligent teenagers can find their way around just about anything that you put in there to block them. And that's been true for a generation. And we shall see about that. And
there is actually this little thing about the internet, isn't there? That it was designed as a nuclear war communication network, so that any damage in that network that the military could route round the damage. So if there's a hole in the network, and of course that works with censorship too, in a way, because if you try and censor the internet, it detects that censorship as damage and routes around it.
Yes, and of course attempts to I mean, there were similar problems if you think back to the invention of printing in the 17th century, and then you know, massive pamphlets, and the governments couldn't really control it. And the same is true of the internet. They can control it by closing it down completely, but then of course it's such an essential feature of modern society that you can't function without it. And if you've got to have it, then basically you've got to allow freedom of speech. But of course they are trying by intimidating people like Assange, anybody else who was thinking that they might, you know, want to leak something or press on some information, that, you know, they're being told, you know, we will come and get you and we'll make
your
life a misery.
I think most people have admitted now that the whole Swedish attempt to indict Assange, which was a European arrest warrant, which hadn't even been charged.
When they go on about there's an extradite, you can't extradite somebody unless there's been a charge. There was no charge.
Apparently under a European arrest warrant you could, just for it to be interviewed.
Well, I mean,
he hadn't actually been charged with
He hadn't actually been charged with anything, and in actual fact,
and also the girls were tweeting something, you know, positive about him when just after apparently we'd had an alleged rape. So anyway, let's not go any further down that road. But let's have a listen now to the House of Commons, who were talking this week at Prime Minister's Questions about this new online harms legislation.
Antoinette Sandbach.
Mr. Speaker, some argue for completely free markets and self-regulation by big business, but this can lead to harmful content and extreme views being promoted. The tech giants who act as publishers have shown that they won't act without regulation. Will the Prime Minister join me in welcoming the publication of the Online Harms White Paper and support the levelling of the playing field between print and broadcast media and the tech giants?
Can I say to my honourable friend, she's raised a very important point that I think matters to people up and down this country. The internet can be absolutely brilliant at connecting people and providing people with information and connecting people not just nationally but across the world. But for too long, the companies haven't done enough to protect users, especially children and young people, from harmful content. And that's not good enough. And that's why we've listened to campaigners and parents. We're putting a legal duty of care on internet companies to keep people safe. And I would like to congratulate my right honourable friends, the Culture Secretary and the Home Secretary, for the work that they have done on this issue. Online companies must start taking responsibility for their platforms and help restore public trust in their technology.
I mean, of course, things like Facebook, Twitter, etc., Martin, they really are global, and it's very difficult for individual governments to regulate them, especially when they're suffering with austerity, that sort of thing. Mm. Isn't it a global thing that we need a global government to deal with?
Well, you'd need global conventions to deal with it, just as, you know, there are global conventions covering other things.
The thing
is,
the Chinese have dealt with it, haven't they? They've said you can't come into this country until you do X, Y, and Z. And, of course, Google, the rest of them all bend over until they do.
Yes, and of course, there's some people who say that the Chinese government tries to control people's opinions and so on. But I bet you, quite likely, Chinese teenagers can always look at stuff they want to look at, whatever the government says. Nobody's going to stop it.
Actually, what happens, of course, I don't know if you know this, but the National Security Agency and others deliberately put out apps there which will allow them to get around their own government's censorship system. That certainly happened when I was over in Iran. Most of the young people had apps where they could use Facebook fine because it had some way of rooting around things so they could do it. But that was an app that had been developed over here.
Obviously there are harmful things out there on the internet. There are harmful things going on in society. You know, child pornography is banned because it involves porn, you know, sexual acts with children being filmed, and therefore that's why it's banned. So it's not so much the YouTube streaming of it that's the problem. It's the act itself which is illegal. And of course, it is illegal for that reason. And that's the way you go. But basically, the internet, like printing in the 17th century, has opened up ordinary people being massively, they've got a huge spectrum of opinions that they can now look into if they want to. And that's basically unstoppable. And attempts to try and close down the internet and things like Assange may be suffering badly now, and he may end up in prison in the US or worse, but the fact of the matter is the stuff he's put out there is still out there, and it's great stuff, and people should look at it.
Of course, he's not the managing editor of WikiLeaks anymore. There's a whole
He's just pioneer. Basically, he's been treated as a scapegoat. But in actual fact, the stuff that they put out there, which we reviewed in the earlier part of the show, was worth knowing. And when they try and squash people like this, you've got to remind people, what is it that they're squashing here? What they're covering up the fact that they themselves are engaged in overtly criminal behaviour. Killing, torturing, maiming, stealing. And
actually, what they're doing
is that
what they're actually doing. Well, so, you know, I'm not so sure nothing gets done about it. What they're doing effectively is abusing offices of state. So this is really what I guess you would call malfeasance. It's the deliberate use of public office in order to commit crime.
Yes, and it's been going on for a long time, but it's got worse. The idea that the CIA was pretty noxious in the 1960s, but the modern CIA have reformed, is for the birds. They were noxious in the 1960s, and they're even worse today.
Well,
and they're probably these organisations need to be completely smashed and disbanded, like the Russian KGB was.
Well,
in the 1990s.
I think John F. Kennedy tried to do that. What happened to him?
Well, we know what happened to him, Tony.
If you're an EU citizen living in the UK, you will need to apply to the EU Settlement Scheme. The scheme is fully open, and you have plenty of time to apply. It is free, and all you need is your passport or ID card, and to complete an online form. Support is available if you have any questions. To find out more and to apply, visit gov.uk/EU Settlement Scheme. Irish citizens or those with valid indefinite leave don't need to apply.
Now let's have a listen to Mike Pompeo, US Secretary of State, who this week, just in time for the Israeli elections and to the great benefit of Benjamin Netanyahu, decided to declare the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, a terrorist organization.
Today, the United States is continuing to build its maximum pressure campaign against the Iranian regime. I am announcing our intent to designate the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, including its Quds Force, as a foreign terrorist organization in accordance with Section 219 of the Immigration and Nationality Act. This is the first time that the United States has designated a part of another government as an FTO. We're doing it because the Iranian regime's use of terrorism as a tool of statecraft makes it fundamentally different from any other government. This historic step will deprive the world's leading state sponsor of terror the financial means to spread misery and death around the world. Businesses and banks around the world now have a clearer duty to ensure that companies with which they conduct financial transactions are not connected to the IRGC in any material way. This designation is a direct response to an outlaw regime and should surprise no one. And it builds on the more than 970 Iranian individuals and entities that the Trump administration has already sanctioned. For 40 years, the Islamic Republic's Revolutionary Guard Corps has actively engaged in terrorism and created, supported, and directed other terrorist groups. The IRGC masquerades as a legitimate military organization, but none of us should be fooled. It regularly violates the laws of armed conflict. It plans, organizes, and executes terror campaigns all around the world. From the moment it was founded, the IRGC's mandate was to defend and export the regime's revolution by whatever means possible. The IRGC institutionalized terrorism shortly after its inception, directing horrific attacks against the Marine barracks in Beirut in 1983 and the U.S. Embassy Annex in 1984, alongside the terror group it midwifed, Lebanese Hezbollah. Its operatives have worked to destabilize the Middle East from Iraq to Lebanon to Syria and to Yemen. With this designation, the Trump administration is simply recognizing a basic reality. The IRGC will take its rightful place on the same list as terror groups it supports: Lebanese Hezbollah, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Hamas, Khatib Hezbollah, among others, all of which are already designated as foreign terrorist organizations.
as Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. More from him in a minute. But Martin, a lot of world leaders, people like President Xi, kind of raising their eyes to heaven. My God, what's he doing here? This is ridiculous. You can't just say that government's Revolutionary Guard Corps are terrorists. But actually, it's more serious than that, isn't it? Because Pompeo is setting the United States onto an almost inevitable course here of war with Iran.
I think that's the significance. I mean, let's face it, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps and the US have never been on each other's Christmas card list. And so in this sense, this is an escalation of the war of words between them. And of course, it's pretty sickening coming from Pompeo, who represents the US, which has basically instigated the creation of Al-Qaeda in the 1980s, along with MI6. And are we a terrorist organisation?
He's saying that the IRGC are the world's leading state sponsor of terror.
Well, what happened to Al-Qaeda? Have they gone off the list? What about ISIS? And in actual fact, the IRGC have been very, very strong in fighting Al-Qaeda and ISIS, which were set up by MI6 and the CIA.
In which case, who then are the world's leading state sponsor of terror?
Well, it's pretty clearly the Americans, the Saudis, the British, and the Israelis.
So is Iran an outlawed regime?
Well, no, the Iranians do dodgy stuff, because everybody does. But they basically are acting defensively. They've had sanctions on them since 1979 when they kicked out the Shah. And there's been a constant attempt to overthrow the regime.
A lot of this is about initiative,
which is a relatively democratic regime for the Middle East.
A lot of this is about initiative, isn't it? Who is actually making the move and who is reacting to the move? Who has got the initiative? It seems that the one thing, the aggressive actions of NATO and the United States, is they always want to grab the initiative so that the other side, as they see it in their kind of game theory way, is always having to react to their moves. It's almost like a chess game.
Well, it is. And if you remember, you went to a conference in Tehran some years ago now about the victims of terrorism inside Iran. And in actual fact, there's been all sorts of terrorism inside Iran directed at the Iranian regime and its supporters and the civilians in general. And the death tolls in about 17,000, I believe.
Well, actually met, probably at least a score of the Iranian Revolutionary Guards when we were over there. I mean, mm-hmm. They were basically our journalists and university professors' protection squad. Mm-hmm. For example, cleared the motorway completely of cars, kept mm-hmm. all the cars back before our minibuses went onto the motorways in Tehran and that sort of thing. And so it was interesting to meet them. Before, in my past life at the BBC, I'd also met people from our security services, and I can tell you who I'd rather spend a few hours in the evening having a pint with, and it's not MI5.
No, and the thing is that...
I mean, they were basically ordinary characters like you and me, quite actually with a great sense of humour.
Yeah, well, I mean, people are people wherever they are. But, I mean, in actual fact, in recent weeks, there have been terrorist attacks inside Iran, which have killed loads of military personnel and civilians. And that's being carried out by our security services and the Iranians and the Israelis. The Iranians are under a constant attack from Al-Qaeda, from ISIS, and from us.
On the 14th of February...
And they're the terrorists.
On the 14th of February, there was a bomb which killed 27... Now, believed some more of those have died, Revolutionary Guards in Iran.
Yeah.
So who planted that bomb?
Well, I believe that one was carried out by Baluchi separatists, but the Baluchi separatists are being armed and directed by Western intelligence services, by
so is this
us and by the Israelis.
CENTCOM. Possibly.
Well, yeah, CENTCOM ultimately, but I mean, but it's all plausible deniability. This is supposedly a revolutionary movement. I mean, basically, the West and the Israelis are supporting every malcontent in Iran that wants to take up arms against the government.
Okay,
of course,
so
they're a fairly mixed population. Some people aren't happy with the central government, so they're given weaponry and training to go around and blow
things
up.
The Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps are the great terrorist masterminds of the planet, and we must not be fooled, says Pompeo.
Well, that's just the big lie. In actual fact, the great terrorist masterminds on the planet are in Tel Aviv, in Riyadh, in Washington, and in London. And that's not to say that the Iranians don't retaliate. They do, but they're very cautious about it.
Okay, 1983, you mentioned there, the Marine Barracks bombing. What, tell us about that, because that seems to have stuck in the craw of
towards the end of the Civil War in Lebanon, the Americans intervened, not that they've got any right to intervene, but they just take it upon themselves to intervene, you know, as they do. And they basically Hezbollah carried out an absolutely cracking military operation carried out by two guys with trucks who both died, but they got into the Marine base, blew it up and killed 200 some odd US Marines. Which, so then the US withdrew its forces from Lebanon because basically they were scared, and then the ships on which they were withdrawn then just fired at random into the mountains in Lebanon, just killing anybody that the shells landed on as their response to losing 250 of their soldiers.
Well, it's a sort of temper tantrum.
Temper tantrum, yeah. But you can't really classify that as a terrorist act. It was an attack carried out in Lebanon by Lebanese people on Americans that they didn't want to be there because they were there to prop up the other side of the civil war. And they killed all soldiers, all military. No civilians were hurt. And that's what soldiers are for, to be blown to bits. And if they don't think that's what they're for, they shouldn't be in it.
OK, let's have a listen to the final part of Mike Pompeo's speech about getting the Iranian Revolutionary Guard to be designated as a terrorist organisation, which they now are by Washington.
The IRGC supports Palestinian terror groups that target in civilians, and it helped create U.S.-designated terror groups both in Lebanon and in Iraq. And the IRGC also backs the murderous Assad regime, which gasses and slaughters its own people. Our designation makes clear to the world that the Iranian regime not only supports terrorist groups, but engages in terrorism itself. This designation also brings unprecedented pressure on figures who lead the regime's terror campaign, individuals like Qasem Soleimani. He's the commander of the Quds Force and oversees Iran's forces deployed to advance the Islamic Revolution through terrorism and other forms of violence. He doles out the regime's profits to terrorist groups across the region and around the world. With this designation, we are sending a clear signal, a clear message to Iran's leaders, including Qasem Soleimani and his band of thugs, that the United States is bringing all pressure to bear to stop the regime's outlaw behavior. We ask that our allies and partners around the world do the same. And if you're the general counsel for a European financial institution today, there's more risk. It is absolutely the case that the IRGC amounts to a significant piece of the Iranian economy through pure kleptocracy. And it is also the case that it is sometimes difficult to know whether the IRGC is involved. That is, the diligence effort is an enormous undertaking. I think this will require more diligence be done by every business that is considering doing things that are even now second and third orders removed from what you might think of as a traditional connection to the Iranian economy.
We now have.
Some people might say, Martin, this is just simply for the Israeli benefit.
Well, I mean, it's clearly their policy to criminalise the Iranian regime, if
we
can call it that.
Don't want the Iranians in Syria. Assad does. I mean, whose is Syria? Who can make decisions like that?
Well, indeed. Basically, you call your enemies terrorists, and your guys are military, the enemy's guys are terrorists, and that's all that's going on here. I mean, the IRGC is a pretty competent organisation. It does retaliate when it's attacked, and General Soleimani is very well respected across the Middle East. I mean, he's basically been clearing ISIS out of Iraq because that's what the Iraqis want, and they don't want US military there. It's going to be put pressure on the Iraqi regime, which is aligned with Iran, and they have very close relationships
anyway,
with the IRGC.
I mean, Israel is a democracy, and we had an election this week. Netanyahu mm-hmm. won. Although I was rather, disgusted to see that there were cameras had been deliberately put into polling stations, which apparently were there to, and they boasted, in fact, the people that put them in there, that they would be very good at keeping Palestinians out of the polling booth, so they wouldn't want to be filmed on the cameras for facial recognition, because then they may be actually arrested. But this is a way, I think, and it's quite obvious, it is a way of keeping Palestinians out from the voting booths by having cameras in there.
Yes, and I think there's debate on the Palestinian side whether they should participate in elections at all. But they do, because you've got a substantial Palestinian minority in Israel itself, but of course they've passed this nationality law, which makes that they're definitely second-class citizens. So although they do have Israeli passports, and they are allowed to participate in elections, they're definitely second-class, they're not fully Israeli citizens. And so on. And of course, the other thing is that there's large chunks of Palestinians who are under you know, basically under Israeli rule, who don't get any kind of say at all.
I mean, it's worth saying, isn't it, though, that the this blacklisting of the Revolutionary Guards Iranians has been some quite interesting countries have come out against it, denouncing it and condemning it, actually, quite forceful expressions, which is Iraq, China, Qatar and Turkey. I mean, all these are quite important countries.
Yeah, they are. Iraq's quite significant because, of course, remember, we went to war to bring democracy to Iraq, and Iraq's democratic government is telling the Americans to get lost on this particular issue.
Okay, staying with Israel, Israeli artists have been joining Palestinians in urging the Eurovision contestants not to play Tel Aviv. Now, are you a Eurovision fan, Martin?
No. I'll be honest.
I thought you might say that. Of course, it has gone downhill over the last 30, 40 years, terribly and sadly, but Madonna is going to be performing there alongside many other unwatchable cultural industry manipulators, but she will be performing at the Eurovision in Tel Aviv. She's made that absolutely clear. But many Israeli artists are joining Palestinians. I'll put a link up to this on our show page, and they are urging the Eurovision contestants to boycott this Eurovision. I mean, it's not even in Europe, Israel, is it? Well, why is this happening?
No, well, I mean, they're honorary Europeans, which is why they love being in the Eurovision song contest. That's what they want to see themselves as Europeans in the Middle East, and therefore, you know, that we've got to support them because they're civilized like us, unlike the evil terrorists on the other side.
So, do you think the boycott will be successful? It's actually, you know, it's quite well.
Well, those who don't want to go won't go, and those who do go will be the ones that want to go. So that's what will happen. And it's all manipulated, and in any case, it's not clear. The only reason it's in Israel is because they won it last time, and they won it last time because probably the thing was manipulated. It's not exactly a fair contest.
I mean, a lot of people...
It's basically a spectacle.
A lot of people have been wondering and asking for years why it is that there's such a sort of an unwavering support for Israel, almost whatever they do, whatever they say. And one of the theories I'd just like to explore now, which we were going to do a bit more of last week, didn't quite have time, is that we're listening to the full this part of it. Is this pastor John MacArthur, who's a Christian Zionist, Martin, the Christian Zionists actually pouring out quite a lot of poison through the so-called spiritual world, I would call pseudo-spiritual world, which is urging Christians of various sorts to kill as many Muslims as they can, because they think that the Muslims are some sort of demonic race that are going to kill Christianity. Now, this is behind the scenes, but it's actually quite a big motivating force for some of the senior people, don't you think?
Well, it's one of the vectors through which the Israelis justify their policies. Although, of course, another of the vectors is that they got the Eurovision Song Contest. I believe it was a transgender gay person who won it, and they want to pretend that they're very much down with all of that, but at the same time they're encouraging the Christian Zionists who don't believe in any of that, and you know, they want World War III
a little bit...
so that Jesus can come.
Well, or the Jewish Messiah, whoever that may be. But anyway, so let's have a listen now to this Christian Zionist hate pastor, John MacArthur.
The world must follow him as he takes over, or he will destroy all enemies of Islam. He will come and he will carry on holy war, and either you convert or you're killed by the Mahdi. He will have an army. His army will be a massive army, and his army will go from nation to nation to punish the unbelievers. The holy writings of Islam say that this army will carry black flags. And on those black flags, there'll be one word, and that one word will be the word punishment. By the way, the Iranian army today carries black flags. They want to be ready for the coming of the Mahdi. He will lead the army of black flags first to Israel, slaughter all the Jews, and then he will establish his rule in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount. That's what their literature says. Slaughter the Jews, establish his rule on the Temple Mount.
Martin, this is a major motivating force, isn't it, for some people. And it's actually like a rather sophisticated confidence trick, which if, I mean, we've heard so much about people like Abu Qatada, but very, very little about these Christian Zionists.
Well, most interesting of all is Mike Pompeo is one of them, and he's the vice president.
Does he believe this, do you think?
Oh, yes. I don't know if he believes the specific things in this particular clip, but he's definitely a Christian Zionist.
What I'll do is I'll put that full clip up on our podcast so you can have a listen to that.
I mean, there's some issues here. We're talking about internet harm. I mean, should people be allowed to push this kind of hateful stuff? My opinion is, let them speak, but let us speak as well, and we're going to say what we think about it.
I know you brought to my attention the publication of a new book on Gladio this week, but before we listen to your review of it, let's have a listen to the author. He's a chap called Dr. Paul L. Williams, talking about Operation Condor in South America, where thousands were disappeared by the United States.
Gladio was a movement, once again, to stop the spread of communism. In Latin America, it was known as Operation Condor. And what the church was wanted to make sure that liberation theology did not rise in South America. And they worked with the CIA throughout South America in this operation called Condor. They put up a lot of petty dictators in Bolivia, in Brazil, in Peru, in Colombia, and especially in Argentina. In Argentina, in the 1970s, 1978, the Vatican and the CIA brought a junta into power to rule Argentina under a guy by the name of General Vidalia. And at that time in Argentina, the head of the Jesuit order, the Society of Jesus, the provincial general of that order, was a guy by the name of Jose Maria Bergoglio. Once again, he controlled all the Jesuits, the Jesuit churches. And what he was doing is he was working with the ruling junta to eradicate anybody who was leftist, anybody that didn't, there was a threat to the Catholic Church. He would turn them over to the junta. The junta would put them on a plane. We're dealing with hundreds and thousands of people. The plane would fly over the ocean, and the army, the Vidalia's troops, would throw the people out of the plane. And they were called the disappeared. Tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people disappeared. Bergoglio was turning people who were leftist over to the Vidalia regime. Not only that, but he was turning over his own priest to the Vidalia regime, who were taken and tortured. And this was a huge, huge undertaking that went on until really the mid-1980s. After that, when a new government took over Argentina, war crimes were, war trials were conducted. And Bergoglio was called to these trials, Jose Maria Bergoglio. He never showed up. He refused to testify. And he is now known as Pope Francis I. He's the only pope in history who has been wanted for war crimes.
Well, interesting little twist at the end of that. The Vatican obviously involved. I mean, you know, this isn't blaming the whole of the Catholic Church, but, you know, we know the Vatican is an absolute centre of intrigue in some of these things.
Yeah, well, I mean, this book puts the linkages in between the CIA, the Mafia, and elements within the Catholic Church. So the Vatican Bank was very essential to the setting up of Gladio in the 1940s because they were outside civilian jurisdiction, because the Vatican was an independent state, and that's why they channeled all their money through it. And
I mean, we had the Nazi rat lines, yeah, the
Nazi rat lines were coordinated with the Catholic Church and the CIA. The CIA coordinated, and MI6, of course, coordinated.
I mean,
all of
I think
stuff.
You just have to be careful how. I mean, I always have to think I have to be careful about the way you deal with this, because it really is like literally the Vatican and some of the corrupt cardinals. It's not the whole church.
No, well, you've got millions of Catholics all over the world. Millions of them are honest as the day is long and decent people. But that's not the point. The structure, like all structures, is a human structure. And it's, you know, you've got alliances between conservative Catholic clergy, fascist generals, and secret police and mafia.
Okay,
and that's what Gladio's been all about over the last 40 years.
It's a shame Mohammed's not here, because it doesn't look like he's here for his show in next hour, so I'd love to have asked him about this Sudanese coup this week, or so-called. Yeah, well, I mean, it's really the military just getting rid of one of their puppets, I suppose.
Well, it is, and similar things happening in Algeria with the removal of Bouteflika. But of course, don't forget that these colour revolutions in Algeria and Sudan, there will also be people pushing the agenda of trying to turn the regimes over. There's always two sides to a story.
Well, I mean, it seems pretty clear that people will just want a decent government of some sort, but will AFRICOM let them? I mean, because Pentagon Command Center, which is very much involved in a lot of these militaries, governments.
Well, in this particular case, my own view would be that the regimes in Algeria and Sudan they're unresponsive to Western pressure, and and of course they're not particularly nice regimes. I'm not trying to defend them, but the removal of those regimes is a part of a geopolitical strategy to try and control natural resources across the whole of Africa.
Okay, and also a little bit closer to home, this, because we are supposed to be buying these planes. The wreckage of Japan's missing F-35 is found. The pilot is missing, too. Wreckage from a Japanese F-35A stealth fighter found the day after it disappeared on the radar over the Pacific. No word on the fate of the pilot. This is the first one ever actually manufactured in Japan, Martin, and it's just turned upside down, belly up, and flown into the sea and killed the pilot.
I think they were terrified that the Chinese might actually get the plane first. And, of course, they're worried about the Turks getting the S-300 missiles, because they've already got F-35s, I believe, and of course the Turks will be able to use.
But the British, Martin, we have a new fleet of these F-35 scam jets on order, but there's a black hole in the defence budget that they've caused. So Britain has already signed a contract for the first batch of 48 F-35s, and estimated to cost £9.1 billion. That's just for 48 planes. £9.1 billion, including support such as training and maintenance. Now, do you know how much that is each? £200 million for one jet. Turns upside down and plops into the sea.
Well, it just kind of... it reminds me of that old slogan. I pray for the day when all of our schools and hospitals are properly funded and the military have to run a jumble sale to pay for their stuff.
We do actually need some planes, don't we? Well, we do. And then we sold all the Harriers. We sold all the Harriers off for nothing, didn't we?
Well, we don't really need an aircraft carrier at all. If we didn't have an aircraft carrier, we wouldn't need any planes to put on it, would we?
Well, it's okay, because the Europeans are building an Euro aircraft carrier. Anyway, time to sign off now for the... US-owned Comcast News at 8 o'clock. Thanks to our guests in the first hour. That was Steve Pearce from the Cabinet, who does waste, and also Lib Dem candidate in next year's mayoral elections, Mary Page. You'll find this show's podcast and comment links this week, oneword.org.uk. I'm on Twitter at Tony Gosling. Have a lovely weekend. Martin Summers is with us too. And do please join us for the politics show at 6 o'clock next week. God bless. And don't let the banksters get you down.
National news on the hour. Live from the Sky News Centre.